required for a reason. So it's not just your main lines of business. You might even have your own software, but anyway, they can do that. We say that the strongest form of this, there's a an application you can get on your phone, or you can get it on your iPad, whatever tablet you have, is an authenticator. And that's going to be an app that you have to also, again, log in and secure with. And it's going to give you a random, like, 6-digit code every 30 seconds. That's the most secure way to do that multi-factor authentication.
Hi, this is Dave Steinberg, your mortgage guy, and this is your Mortgages Made Easy podcast. Taking a different approach today, because so many of the people that I work with, so many of my clients own their own business or have active roles in the management of their business. We're sitting with Jack Watkinson of Outsource My IT. And Jack, to put it up front, is the guy who helps me on my computer security. And we're going to have a conversation, and you're welcome to listen in, about what you need to know first as a business owner or as a business person with computers in your business that you rely on. And then as an individual, we'll talk about a little bit about your personal technology and how that all fits in. Jack, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Dave. Excited to be on the podcast with you.
So what are the risks that a small business owner might face in 2024?
There's a stat I just recently heard, and it was that from IBM, actually, that 1 out of 10 companies last year, worldwide organizations, there was an attempted ransomware attack on their company. And that number is up 33% from the previous year. And the person who was speaking went on to say, "You're not too small to be attacked anymore. You're too small to make the news." So it used to be that you think that they were only going after the big carriers. Everyone knows there was a breach recently with AT&T, but they're small organizations that might not have the right level of security. So they won't show up in the news, but they're very liable. They can still just be hit. And a lot of the what's happened in the cybercrime world is there's a lot more syndication, a lot more organized groups of this. And what they're seeing as a trend, I was talking with the FBI last week, actually, is that they'll go after small businesses and use that so they can get their practice, so to speak, and can continue to get better so they can go after bigger organizations. So it could just be a start for someone. It could be what they see that they do well with. But it's no longer just these one-off random attacks. It's become a business, and it's something that is a nonstop thing that people actually see. So all levels, and you're able to be just as risk as Home Depot is. The difference is what's your ability to recover and respond. And it's become a diligence that you need to do every single day for your business to make sure that you have security that matches. Because once you get security in place, technology is a wonderful thing. It helps you grow your business. So you get through the doom and gloom that's so easy to see in my industry. And then you get to look at the enablements of technology. You get to look at the fun sides of AI and how it can grow your business, and it becomes an investment and something that augments your abilities instead of just looking at, is it a risk to my business? That's probably where I'd start, is that, you know, no one's too small, but the security is becoming more and more important. And we're also seeing more trends in compliance and requirements, because the government is trying to figure out, based off your industry, they're giving lower thresholds to if you need to follow certain requirements, trying to catch up with it. The estimated damage this year is supposed to be, I think, $9.5 trillion in damage from cyber attacks. So they're coming up with more rules on a daily basis for your everyday mom and pop, as much as they are for the large organizations, because having rules in place is trying to give a little bit of structure for you to follow, whether you're financial and have to follow FTC, Or if you're, you know, if you're going to be more in the medical in one way or another. One thing that changed is, you know, the bars to entry are lower. But when you need help, if it becomes a federal matter, it's so rampant now for the FBI to get involved. You need to have more than $10 million in damage to be done. So they're trying to have more rules so they don't have to focus on the little guy. They just have protection in place, because it is still, you know, like I said, it's a nonstop thing that they're constantly working on.
So, you know, just to use a probably a bad analogy, but the what comes to mind is like getting attacked is like having somebody punch you in the face.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
Absolutely no fun.
Yeah, it probably feels pretty close to being that. That's probably
and having a
spot
big
on.
Having a big strong guy punch you in the face. We're not talking about a 97-pound weakling here. So
yeah.
What are the basic kinds of protection that a business needs in 2024?
The basic needs. One big one that I think gets overlooked a lot, actually, is the patching and updating of systems. There's a lot of things that they just call CVEs, which are, you know, common vulnerabilities is really what it's short for. There's a lot of shorthands in my industry. By doing that, you really get rid of a lot of the common things that they've seen. Even Google, I believe it might have been 5-6 months ago, it issued that they had a zero-day threat, meaning as a threat that no one, even them and their dark team had seen. And it was just a quick update on Google Chrome or anyone that works on a Chromium system. So something like that, updating and being able to do this system-wide, you know, just maintenance things goes a long way.
So
next,
just to be clear, what you're saying is when I log on to my computer or log off to my computer at the end of the day, often there's a little alert that says update and shut down or update and sleep. And you're saying that that's a critical step.
That'll do some of it too. And if you do have a managed service provider, they'll just have the next level of that as well. And I would also say it can't be overstated enough having, as much as people hate doing that multi-factor authentication. Yeah, it can stop 80, I think it's 80 to 90% of attacks can be stopped just by having multi-factor authentication, which could be a text message, it could be an email, it could be like, you know, how you have to use your face to open your phone, like the facial recognition. That's a form of multi-factor, and it's just having a second layer to that.
Explain that a little bit better. When you're saying, so that you're saying that when I access my key systems, particularly if they're online, we need to have a multi-factor authentication. And in fact, I do on almost everything I do business use for my business is we require a two-level authentication. If I want to log on to my email, I have to use a technology to acknowledge that it's me. But tell us a little bit more about what you mean by it. When is it relevant and how does it work?
Sure, I would say as many places you could do, because all your main lines of business at work are definitely important. But I would also, not that this was about, I would say if you have social media, if you're on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, all these websites where we give a lot of our information out freely are also have the ability. So if you have Microsoft, you might have it already with your Outlook. That might already be in place, but it's important to do it anywhere that you can. In fact, I think it's PCI compliance that actually says anywhere that you can, you must. So if it is an ability of it, so if you need to take a credit card or a debit card anywhere in the world, because PCI is not a US-based entity, you have to have that layer in there. So it's required for a reason. So it's not just your main lines of business. You might even have your own software, but anyway, you can do that. We say that the strongest form of this, there's an application you can get on your phone or you can get it on your iPad, whatever tablet you have, is an authenticator. And that's going to be an app that you have to also, again, log in and secure with. And it's going to give you a random, like, 6-digit code every 30 seconds. That's the most secure way to do that multi-factor authentication. Biometrics is really big, too. Biometrics is probably the next best. The reason we don't say text messages is there was a breach, and there's actually, just, again, like AT&T just got hit again. So if you got that text message to your phone, there was something like, I want to say 800, I think it's like 870 million accounts got breached. So the company that's responsible for messages that go inter-carrier, meaning if you're Verizon then to T-Mobile or if you were Sprint to whatever, anyone. So the company that hands the transition of that data got breached. So it was said that they could have access to some of that information. So not that it isn't secure, it's most certainly better than not doing it. But is as if we're going to give a hierarchy to which ones are more secure and less secure, we would say that that would be lower on the list. And then obviously email would probably be the lowest one, because if you had a breach on your email and someone can confirm that they are themselves, kind of put yourself back in a box at that point.
Yeah. So if you have a Gmail account and I was able to clone your Gmail account, I could see all the traffic coming in and then respond. And if you don't know that I can see what's going on, you're in big trouble.
Yeah. Recently, it was said to me that the average criminal will stay on someone's network for 6 months before they make their move. So they're not just getting on there, Dave. They're getting on there and they're trying to observe and see how much can they get. So if you give them the inch, where's the mile on this one? So it's not just, hey, I got this today, I'm going to email everyone they have. They can see what kind of transactions you have, what kind of conversation. Take their time, because if you haven't caught them, they're going to find out what they have. 98% of attacks right now are also going at people's backup solutions too. So if someone's on your account for 6 months and they've go after your backups, put you in a pretty rough spot pretty quickly if you don't have the right systems in place.
So talk about backups. What do you recommend as basic standard for backups?
Well, I had a whole talk I did on this, and it was really funny. It was almost like a mirror on a mirror on a mirror, you know, just trying to go through redundancy and how redundancy matters for that. What I'd actually like to say is there's a common misnomer that people using OneDrive or Google Drive, that it's a backup. And their disclaimers, they actually say they aren't. So what you really need, and even if you use those solutions for your information, you need to make sure you have something that does do a backup, does external from. We recommend, so if you use Microsoft like so many people do, don't have your backups through Microsoft, have it through a different company. So if Microsoft ever would have an issue, have it somewhere else. We like direct to cloud backups, and we like someone that's going to confirm that the backups are actually taking place. So if something doesn't happen, you know when, you can find out why, and you have a quick way to actually remediate. It could just be some small thing, and often it is. It's, you know, the cloud is just, your computer's not in front of you, it's somewhere else. So maybe they changed something on a computer and your backup didn't happen. Well, there's still a physical device somewhere. Redundancy, I think, really does matter in that regard too. So if you have more than one solution, it's not a bad thing. You just want to make sure it's not overdoing the resources, but having more and having them in different locations, because you're trying to make it so you have the most recent information and that you always have a clean copy of it too. There's some ideas in IT where they do what they call ZTA or Zero Trust Architecture. And one thing they'll do with backups is when they have the backup done, they'll also remove it from the environment. So if something ever happens to the environment, it's completely disconnected at that point too. So there really is no way things can connect with that backup. It's a little more involved, but the reason is, you know, even if you have that backup continuously checking in, there's a connection point to that. So Zero Trust Architecture is something you'll see mostly on a more on a larger scale. You don't see that on your small mom and pop, because it's at some point it takes a lot more layers to be able to actually have that in place. So have a backup, and also industry wide, if you're following SEC, you need to have something that gives you the years of retention. So if you have a backup solution in place, make sure that it actually matches your requirements, because you don't need to get in a problem of 4 years down the road just because you thought you had the backup. So do your job and make sure that you also, when someone says, hey, yes, you're being backed up, oh, hey, listen, Dave, I have worked for XYZ Corporation. We have to follow SEC. Is this going to back up for this many years? And if someone isn't, you usually have to show, like, it's a, can you make your case in court if you had to do your due diligence and say, hey, we do show that we're going to be backed up for indefinitely at this point and following the rules that we're supposed to.
When it must be 20 years ago that I started with programs like Norton and maybe later Kaspersky and whatever. Are those still effective, or are those things you recommend for a small businessman?
If I were to recommend for a small business, I do tell, like, if someone doesn't have, a lot of times if you're working with a provider, they probably have someone, and you can still see who they're working with. We've used a couple of different ones, so not all of the solutions we use are available to just someone to buy off the internet themselves. If you were to go buy one, I would probably say, without going through a provider like us, I would say somewhere like Webroot is a good product. Microsoft Defender has come a long way as well. We on the inside of our industry see people using CrowdStrike, SentinelOne, Cylance. But what you're looking for, there's a report that's done every year called the MITRE attack report, and it shows two things, and it's independent too. It takes all the I'm just gonna lazily call them antivirus providers, and it'll show the detection risk, like how good are they at detecting an issue and how good are they at preventing. It looks at those two metrics and it gives a grade on how well something actually does. When we see people have Norton or McAfee, we kind of walk in and know that we have our work cut out for us. Yes, they will catch certain things, but you want something that actually shows well. And the thing I like about that test, it's not me grading my homework. I'm able to say, hey, listen, here's the solution we use. We audit our own solutions. Now we see that this one's doing better and performing better against today's threats. Be willing to change with the times. Like, as I said, like Norton back when it was I grew up having Norton myself. It was a great product for many years that we had used. There's been a lot of advances and there's a lot of companies that continue to look at this evolving threat. That's, I think it's just a very well-known name at this point. They're able to hang their hat on that a lot more than the companies that sit on the back end of the channel and looking at the modern threats. Definitely work good.
You and I just had a conversation before we jumped on this Zoom, but we had a conversation about firewalls. If I have, Spectrum or Verizon coming right into my office, is it important for me to put a firewall between the service into my office and my computers?
Absolutely. And in most cases, it's also required. And I'd like to explain what a firewall is a little bit, if I can. Because on your computer, there's the little setting what says turn firewall on and off. When it comes to compliance, it says, do you have a firewall? It's not talking about that. It's talking about there's a physical device that's going to come in wherever your internet comes in. And what it does is it's going to govern the internet traffic for your office. And you can actually set this to have more strict or less strict settings. You can change it by geographical regions. And it's going to, so if I were to give you a GPS for internet traffic, and we know that there's good neighborhoods and bad neighborhoods, if I were to say, hey, listen, Dave, I know you don't want to, you're trying to go that way. You can't drive down those roads. It's going to give you the safe pathway to do that. There's no silver bullet in IT. But it's going to hedge your bet and make sure that your traffic is safer. So a
If you see
firewall.
something coming from Korea, from North Korea or China or Russia, that
Yeah.
might be
Exactly.
a red
Yeah. So
warning.
you can change that right at the gate and it'll actually, so if you go to a website, it won't let, and it's a real best practice for being able to have. Because the old rule was allow everything and then stop it after you realize it's bad. Now the world is don't trust anything until it's given you a reason to trust it. And that goes with your internet connection as well, because those orientations matter for that. So it's just a different level of security and is one of the most basic things. When we start in, it's one of the first things we look at is does this business have it? It also is going back to a lot of the compliance requirements. I want to say every single compliance requirement, if you have to follow a framework or compliance, is going to require that you have a firewall. The exception to the rule, which I thought was a bit funny, is if you're doing PCI compliance and you have, again, you're taking credit cards, but you don't have an office, you need to be able to encrypt information. So if you're using one of those like square devices that attaches to your tablet or phone, it's going to scramble and encrypt your information at the gate. So you no longer have that. As soon as you use that device, it's no longer, it's just using you as a gateway for that point. But that's the only way to really circumvent that part of it. But otherwise, if you're going to take payments, it's going to say you need to know that you have safe traffic, and that comes with having a firewall at that point for your business.
Now, we've spoken about hardware. I must get at least once a week, I must get an email from someone purporting to be a realtor, purporting to be a title company, purporting to be a bank, and they want me to do something.
Yeah. So let me talk about spam here for a second. So if you had, so Microsoft and Google have built-in spam features. They're about, I want to say 90% effective if configured correctly. if you have a spam filter in place, they're going to be probably about 90, best in class is 99% effective. There's, you know, these are not numbers I've researched, so I can't confirm them, but this is what I had recently heard, is there's on average, I think it was, I can look at it if it's per day. I think it's per day. I think it's 333 billion spam emails per day.
That sounds like a large number.
It is. So if even if something was, even if everyone, every single person, and I was right, just confirming it was 333 billion. If every single person had best in class solutions, that means 3.3 billion emails still get through the cracks. So you're going to have layers to the approach. So part of it is learning to make sure if that person is either an actual person or if they're just shopping you. Because I mean, we all are trying to build up our clientele too. So we might have certain people we look at. But some spam, they have different levels of it. Some are actual people trying to market to you, whether it's cold marketing. Some people are trying to, you know, fish and get your information. There's different layers to it. But that means even with everyone, every single person with best in class solutions, 3.3 billion spam emails will get through every single day. And that's where it comes the big thing in our industry is at the end of the day, it comes down to the person on the other side of the computer does still need to know a little bit about what they can and can't look at, what they don't. You can configure some of this stuff to be filtered out a little more. You can tweak it so it gets better as you go. So it's a bit of a process, but there always will be a little of that. The only way to completely avoid getting those is just turn your computer off. We'll go back to typewriters. I don't know where mine is anymore. I'd have to really have to look in the attic. But that's the one way to not get that. Unfortunately, that's probably the best answer on. So it's the only way to really not have it. And oh, and then I had by that same stance, that means there's over 1.2 trillion spam emails that are going to get through every single year. Do the best you can. That's going to get through. That's if everyone had best in class, which more likely that there's going to be closer to, you know, probably 8, 9, 10 trillion that get through. Because the reality is your average person's using, you know, if it's a mom and pop, they're using their Gmails, right? Why not? Or again, having these layers of security to no surprise, there's certain costs to levels of security too, right? Nothing's really free, right? Not at the end of the day.
So in my business, one of the things we do is when we get a phishing email, we share it. We print it out and we all look at it. So we say, oh, look at this. They wanted our wiring instructions. I don't think we should give it. What do you think? And we have conversations about the emails that are coming, so people are have their radar attuned to you know, we may not print everything out, but the ones that are and they're going through our system, so we're the threats are generally disabled by the time we get to them.
Yeah, well, I'd say printing it is better than I sat and talked with a law firm in New York one time, and they said anytime we think we're getting a phishing email, we send it, we forward the email to our IT company. And I said, well, if they have security in place, that email should never reach them. So every time you forward them, it should, if they're the one who's providing the level of security, what you're doing and sending either a screenshot or, you know, so can someone take a look at this or printing it out is the best way. If you are going to share it, that's the better, safer way to share something like that. So people could be informed, but don't ever forward the email itself and then put a top part that says, here, don't click this, don't open this, because don't give people the option. Printing it out or that screenshot, it's again your best way to inform and have people avoid that. And as we continue to do the ignore and look at, so we're gonna, it's a, you know, we use the Internet of Things to work together to try and, like you said, you sharing this information, and then we actually try and, if we block something on our side, we try to block it globally, right? We found out that they tried this person, but we don't know that they're gonna find a different way that they're gonna try and call Dave. So we're gonna block, if we find it from Dave, we're gonna block it for everyone else at that point.
You mentioned the Internet of Things, and in your audit of my company, one of the things you asked about is what devices are connected to our internet. Why do you care?
Well, I think people, so there's a part where they started talking about IoT, which means the Internet of Things, and devices that were smart devices that were set up with factory settings on things without having the other levels of security. So if you have internet and you never change the stock password on something, and then you have a smart thermostat, that there was a casino that was taken for millions of dollars, and they found out that it was through the fish tank. So the fish tank was a smart fish tank, and they're trying to figure out that somehow they managed to use that and hide on network. So it was able to act as if it was just a terminal for someone. So we're more connected than we ever were, but we need to make sure that if we connect something, that there's a reason that if you were to work from home and you have a router from whatever person you have, or it's Verizon, you need to change that password, and you need to make sure that everything else is switched along the way, because if anything comes out with a factory setting on it, and if someone's really meaning to attack someone, if someone's really deliberately attacking someone, if they're depending on how smart that person is, it's really hard to stop them. But you want to put any way that you can slow them down, anything you can put in their pathway, make it, don't make it easy for someone. But yeah, the internet devices, what I've seen is 92% of data breaches now are done through emails. And it makes you scratch your head like, that one's easy. I understand phishing, don't click on this. But the other 8%, we had someone who we had to track back. The only thing that we figured out was they were at the airport using free internet at the airport. Well, while they were doing that, they must have been on the same network as someone else who just thought they'd fish around. They don't know this person. They never could probably pick them as a stranger in the crowd. But someone's just sitting there at the airport trying to say, maybe I'll fish for a company's information, see what I find today. It's scary to have that, miscellaneous 8%, and someone could just be on the same network with you. And you don't even know if it's another computer. Going back to that casino example, it was a fish tank. Who would have ever thought something so, it seems so innocent, could do so much damage to someone?
So before we go back, so you're talking about smart refrigerators, you're talking about smart thermostats, you're talking about maybe smart alarm systems that are communicating out to the rest of the world. Well, if there's the ability for someone to communicate in, then you need to defend that.
Yeah, and that's where it comes to just a little of like your internet. You can also, not that it's fun or convenient, change your password to your internet every so often at your house. And if that means you have to change it on the smart devices too, we're able to do something called the dark web scan, where we're able to look at your domain, and we can see sometimes, and this is information that's not quite public, but you have to have a couple of resources to be able to do it. But we've been able to go and tell someone, like, hey, listen, I see you've been using the same password for 10 years. There might be a reason that you're for concern here. Because if someone's reusing something like that, at some point, you might have given enough people out that password. You have your friends, family, cousins come over, and every person gets the Wi-Fi. You have it written on your refrigerator. So, well, why not switch it every so often? Because who knows where they have been? And if they ever need to get back in again, just give them the password again. Do something where it makes it easy. Switch it up. Just over time, there's a lot of companies will actually, even medically, have it so passwords are set to expire and reset. So why would you think that your internet shouldn't do those same things over time? Just it's hedging your bet on where someone could get access at that point. So again, if you do that, you get to leverage the cool sides of technology. Having a smart fridge that's able to tell you when you actually, hey, listen, you're gonna need to get bananas, you need to get peppers, you need to get. It's nice to know that you've got milk at this point. You can look on the outside. So there's a cool part of what it can do when you check off the box of, all right, well, if I've literally never changed this password, maybe it's time for me to. It doesn't make it that hard for me, and it might slow us down, but it's a lot better than the alternative. That's where we've come with security is it might be a little inconvenient, but it's a heck of a lot better than the alternative if you ever lose that information.
Got it. Now, I don't know, like you look like a human being, or maybe you may be some a representation. And I'm guessing you have all the usual personal devices. You have a cell phone, you have a tablet, you may have a smartwatch.
All in front of me.
As a consumer now, What should I be aware of? What threats do I have as a consumer that I don't have a big business behind me? I don't have a corporation, but I've got my iPhone. I've got my Android. I've got my smartwatch. What are the threats, and how does an individual address some of those threats?
I think if you're going to have all these things, so I have my iPad right in front of me. I bring around for a lot of my meetings. It's just for work. So if you're going to have a lot of things that, so I do a lot of separation of work and personal. And that's been a way for me to be able to know that my work comes with an inherent level of security. At some point, yes, with your personal phone, you know, it's a little harder to manage that, but it's just become a bit of a necessary evil that we're just used to living with. I mean, if someone walks around my phone and just says, you know, Disney too many times, I'm going to start getting ads for Disney trying to get me to go on vacation. I know that. So I think my wife just went around saying engagement rings forever and ever. And at some point, you know, she got one. So
it works.
It worked. It definitely worked. No,
that and the shotgun.
I kept saying chainsaws, but I didn't get a damn chainsaw. I just have all these branches that I have to figure out what to do with. I'd say separation between work and personal is a healthy thing. That's why in my industry, it's so big to talk about not having companies that use BYOD or bring your own devices, because it's hard to separate someone's pictures of their family vacations from, you know, what are risks to business. Because usually the risks to the personal, they're there, but people are, a business seems to have a lot more of a longer track of dominoes that could fall if something gets breached, if there's a risk. And it could be someone that, hey, what's the vendor you deal with the most? And someone has to now consider all those things. With a person, yes, it would be, hey, my debit card got breached, reset that part. I have to switch my Amazon Prime card or whatever it ends up being. It's usually less steps involved in that than the business. And the reporting side of it. So I believe in having a little bit of separation on that one.
I agree with you entirely. As you and I have discussed, I have two firm rules about that with my employees. But for Summit Funding, any email that's sent to Summit Funding can only be accessed on a business owned device. We just don't use that address for anything else. You know, I guess what I am concerned about for my clients, I'll share my own concern. I do not do any banking at all, zero, on my phone. I always get the heebie-jeebies when I see someone doing banking on their phone, because I think that they're subjecting themselves to risk, particularly, as you said, if that's the guy who then goes into Starbucks and uses his phone from just attaches to Starbucks internet and uses his phone that way, or she goes into a hotel and uses the hotel Wi-Fi, and et cetera. So for me, I have a red line where I just don't do any banking at all on my personal device or my mobile device. It's all on a desktop device.
Yeah. Some of that I'll absolutely agree. It's a bit of, I look at things as I joke about things being occupational hazards, where, you know, I see someone trying to log into the Panera Wi-Fi. I'm like, don't do that. Well, I don't have many bars. Well, that's fine. Then you just don't have service here. Like, don't log out to the same internet that actually, and it's disclaimer that says it's free and everyone else can have access to it. Don't really give that information up. I also.
Can I jump in on that and just ask you?
Sure.
If I use a VPN, which is a third-party secure network to secure my communication, does that alleviate the risk, or is that not good enough?
It is, for most tenants, I would say good enough. It greatly lowers the risk because it just encrypts that internet connection. So it almost makes you, again, I don't want to say nothing is 100% in our industry, but it almost makes you invisible to a certain stance at that point. So it is a lot better to be using that.
So
Just like,
let's just translate that for people who aren't aware. If you go into Starbucks and you just allow your phone to connect to the Starbucks intranet, then there are technologies that allow people to intercept your communication with the Starbucks technology. And then, if you're sending something with a password, if you're logging into your Amazon, if you're logging into your bank account, that can glom that information and now you're in trouble. And there are programs, you told me that there's one you prefer, but there are programs that act as a gatekeeper between you and the free internet,
the free,
and
yep.
that will up your security game.
Absolutely. We also did that as a company. If someone isn't, it's a pretty common practice to see a lot of people. If someone's going to work from another location, have if they still need access to company information, because as we get more cloud driven, we still do. So be able to use the a VPN connection so I can access those company files. It still needs to be set up and done so I can actually have that access, but to know that I'm using a safe way of actually doing that. And I also want apples and oranges again, comparing a little bit like having a VPN is more secure, just like having a password manager. It's going to be helpful because you can ha help manage your passwords. You could try and remember all of them, but having some of these things are going to be a lot of the things you're doing. Someone once taught me that cybersecurity isn't a one solution item. It's about having enough items in a row that make it so that deterrence for people to get through. So if they got through layer one, they still have other things in their way. And in the meantime, if you have someone who is monitoring and looking at these things, it gives them time for response. It gives it the ability to mitigate any risk to a company by having more levels before they can get through and get to the vault at that point, whatever said vault is in any given situation.
Got it. This has been so valuable, Jack. If someone wanted to reach out to you for their business, what's the best way for them to find you?
Sure. The easiest way I would say is probably by email, which my email is just Jack, Jack, at outsourcedbyit.com, or they
I
can
will
find
put
me on
that below so people find the easy way to find you.
sure, or they can find me at LinkedIn. Just search for Jack Watkinson, and I'd be happy to either way connect. I love the other thing I'd like to do is be a resource for people. So if people have questions, I really work differently than our tech team who's going to be putting out fires. But if you want to know, like we've talked about VPNs, we've talked about internet devices. So if anyone ever has questions, I love being our resource. So if there's something that this is unclear or it's not maybe not your forte, be happy to answer anything that someone's curious about when it comes to cybersecurity.
What I love about you, Jack, is your generosity, because I've known you now for about a year, and that generosity is always there. It's front and center. You're very present, and I know that when I ask you a question, you're giving me the best answer you can. And for anyone who has computer technology and wants to learn more about computer security or just managed your IT total solution, that's the that those are services that Jack is an expert at, and can't refer him highly enough, recommend him highly enough. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you. It's been fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This is great. I love talking about all this stuff, and I think I drink from a fire hose of constantly looking at it. So it's nice to be able to share my thoughts on all this. I had one final thought I want to come back to. I just thought so. Talk about. I brought my work computer home with me a month ago, and my wife went to look at Airbnb. Well, my company device doesn't allow that. So I had to explain to her that there's more security on my computer you can pick up your computer to look at it. You can't pick up my computer to look at it. So I just thought it was funny that she just wanted to look. Well, why can't I plan a trip on yours? Because you can't plan a trip on mine. It's not what this device does.
Interesting. Now I've got to talk to you about that and s see where I need enhancements.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Jack. This has been your Mortgages Made Easy podcast, and I'm Dave Steinberg, and I'm here to help.